This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Salkeld, a constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. This past week, FRC President Tony Perkins was out of the studio, where we had two excellent guest hosts for him that we'll hear from today. First up is Sandy Rios, a talk radio host who is heard on many of these same stations. Sandy had a chance to talk with Representative Dave Bratt of Virginia about the Republican health care bill that is currently making its way through committee. Dave Bratt is a member of the House Budget Committee, as well as the House Freedom Caucus. Here's the first question that Sandy Rios asked of Representative Bratt.
In a nutshell, why does the Freedom Caucus have such a problem with this bill? What's wrong with it?
Yeah, well, Jim Jordan is about as good as you can get. And he says it's basically as simple as keeping your word to the American people. When you say you're going to repeal something, they expect a repeal. And when you're done with this repeal and replace, it's got way too many of the components of the Obamacare three-legged stool. It's still got the mandate turns into a 30% penalty, and then we're adding another entitlement piece, and the major issue we have is the insurance regulations stay in. And so the insurance regs are hard to understand, but the average person knows what they look like. Right now, when you go out to buy an insurance premium, you can't buy a catastrophic premium anymore. There are what's called essential health benefits that are mandated by your federal government, and that's the problem. We're trying to get away from a federally government-run healthcare system that just crashed and burned under Obamacare. And the major reason was we paid all attention to coverage and no attention to price. And so President Trump is a better businessman. He knows you have to pay attention to price and quality and service. And so that's one of his major goals, is try to get shopping across state lines to drive those prices down and get rid of the regulation.
Congressman, the CBO, of course, came out yesterday with a scoring of this Ryan healthcare bill. That's the best way I can name it right now. There are a lot of things to say about that, but you're an economist. So I would love to know what your assessment was about that report.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of numbers in there, and they do what they're going to do. It all has to do with budgeting and how they score, you know, revenues and taxes and spending, whatever. And you don't need to pay a whole lot of attention. The one thing I will say that the Ryan bill proponents are coming out and saying it's going to save 10%. But I do want to comment on that, because that's the piece I'm interested in. And so I got a few points to make on that. So they're saying there's a 10% savings, but that only comes 3 years down the line, after 3 years. The first 3 years, you're not going to witness those price declines. And what do you think is going to happen to the politics in the meantime when people aren't seeing price declines? And then secondly, why do you get those price declines? And unbelievably, it's because you get rid of one insurance reg. You get rid of the platinum, gold, bronze thing. And that produces huge savings. So imagine what would happen if we got rid of the rest of the insurance regulation. And that's my overall point. And then the 10% saving, what does that mean? Does that mean your rates are going to go down or your deductibles are going to go down? No, it's 10% from the baseline. Well, what is the baseline? The baseline is rates are going up 25% a year under Obama. And, right, everybody knows that. And so if you save 10% off of rates going up 25%, I think everybody can do the math, you're still up 15%. And so that's good, but it's not good enough. Everybody wants to see us bend the cost curve down, and Paul Ryan promised us we would do that. And so they got bucket two, which the secretary can do, right, to get rid of the insurance regs, but that comes after we vote on this piece that only requires 51 votes. So it's absolutely crucial we hold our guns and say, no, we got to have that bucket two put into law so we make it permanent, so that when you get the next Democrat president, they don't get to go right back to Obamacare, right? This is a once-in-a-century opportunity to get this stuff right. And so don't worry too much about the CBO score. Worry more about, does it bend the cost curve down, and are you really going to see your bottom-line prices and premiums go down? And the answer is, with this bill, the part that we're voting on, the answer is no. We've got to do way more heavy lifting to get the average person what we promised them with a full repeal.
You know, I get the question has to be asked, and I have asked it, and I'll ask you again. Who in the world wrote this bill? I know that the leadership is, they're not telling us. You know, Sarah Palin made the comment that they should be like NASCAR drivers. They should come down in their suits and get patches to identify who paid, you know, for what they're doing. So was it, you know, who is it? Who's making, who benefits from this bill? Can you tell by reading it?
I mean, it's always follow the money, right? So you got it right. And the best lobbyists, the most powerful ones you never hear about. So you do the math from there, right? I'm not going to.
All right. So
I think everybody knows the big, big money's in play here.
Well, you know, it reminds me very much of what they did to you guys over the issue of immigration. They all boasted and bragged and preened about how they were going to build a wall and, you know, and tighten up immigration law. And that wasn't what they meant to do. What they wanted to do was get rid of you guys. You won on that issue, Dave, in the 7th District, as I don't have to remind you. So you guys, Raul Labrador sort of challenged the president to say, hey, we're the ones that supported you. You know, those are the guys that were the Never Trumpers and were trying to undermine you. So do you think that you communicated that message to the president?
It's getting through, right? Because the grassroots, thank God, are coming to the rescue as always. Thank you, people out there that are listening. You're the people that make this country run. And Trump is a loyal guy, right? He knows the evangelicals listening out there put him over the top. And I think he was humbled by the experience. He's a fun guy to be around. And people naturally like him. But you're right. I mean, he's being duped by some people that are not looking out for his best interest. So he thinks we're being probably a little bit sticklers and, you know, we're worried about all this Constitution and free market stuff, right? He's more of a businessman. And so, you know, he wants to get this thing done. So I appreciate that. But at the same time, he's hearing from the wave of conservatives out there that are not happy with this repeal because there's not a full repeal. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think he's hearing loud and clear, and I think he's going to come to the bargaining table and start pounding the fist and listen to the conservatives a little bit more. So keep it up out there. You got to keep the volume up.
All right, so Thursday, as my understanding, that the Budget Committee, of which you're a part, and there were several conservatives on that committee with you, that this is going to come before your committee. This is what I'm reading. You should know. And that it only take 4 Republican votes to actually stop this thing. Do you think that might happen Thursday?
It could happen. They delayed it a day. And so I know there's a couple, but I don't know where the other guys are going to come down. So we'll see. There's 3 Freedom Caucus folks. And then there's a couple freshmen that made pretty strong commitments on Obamacare in the past. And so we'll see. But there'll be a lot of pressure that comes down on these guys.
All right, one last question. Do you think there's any chance then that Donald Trump might come down on your side of saying, look, let's just repeal it, then we'll take a little longer with replacement?
Well, he'll want to cover, folks. He's made the commitment. He wants to find a way to cover. But I think the way to do that is by bringing the cost down substantially. Hannity's had a doctor on the past few nights that can reduce costs, I mean, by over half, he's talking. He's bidding down pharmaceutical prices 80-90% for some of his clients. And so, you know, Trump is a business guy like that. So he wants everybody to be able to afford reasonable health care. So he's going to look for a solution that's a win-win across the board, and I think we can do it together.
All right, Congressman Bratt, we need to be praying for you. I do. I told you that personally, and I'm encouraging other people listening to pray for those guys in the Freedom Caucus. Many of them are Christians, and even if they're not, they are honest men who want to do the people's business.
They are.
They need our support.
They're super people. Super. Yep.
So God bless you, Dave, and Congressman Bratt, we'll talk to you soon.
Hey, God bless you, Sandy, and everybody out there listening. Thanks for all you do.
You can find out more about Representative Bratt as well as the healthcare bill when you visit TonyPerkins.com. While you're there, why don't you consider a gift to the Family Research Council as they continue to fight for your values in Washington, D.C. and around the country. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back with a look at the passage of State Bill 6 in Texas.
From defunding Planned Parenthood to confirming a pro-life justice to serve on the Supreme Court, we're going to need your help to advocate for life in the digital sphere. At Family Research Council's Pro-Life Con Digital Action Summit, a diverse group of advocates who are using the latest technologies to advance the pro-life cause helped empower viewers to better reach their community on social media. Be a part of the movement and discover the amazing things digital activists are doing for life in 2017 at frc.org/ProLifeCon.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. On Wednesday's edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, sat in for Tony, and he spoke with Jonathan Sines, who is the president of Texas Values. They talked about the successful passage of the Texas Privacy Act. Here's Dr. Piper.
Jonathan, welcome to Washington Watch this afternoon.
Well, it's good to be with you. And look, the focus here, too, though, is what happened yesterday and what was finalized today. The Texas Senate gave final passage to the Texas Privacy Act, Senate Bill 6, very common sense, balanced measure. But it's about addressing and responding to what we've seen at the federal government level. We've seen it in local school districts and cities in the state of Texas, because there's been an effort for a number of years to try to change how we handle these type of issues, right? And so people have tried to pass local ordinances. Obama's administration, DOJ, and Department of Education pushed a letter out that would have forced all public schools, not just in Texas, but we have 1,200 school districts in Texas, but across the country, to allow boys in the girls' bathrooms. And if not, they were going to lose federal education funding. And so, but look, states have banded together. 13 states sued the federal government on that issue that Texas led, and we won in court on that. And then Trump rescinded the issue and said, we're not going to do this. The states need to handle this issue. And so, but we already saw this issue exploding. In Houston, they voted down an effort to allow men into women's bathrooms. And still, school districts and local governments tried to push the same policy. In Fort Worth, parents revolted, and they had Fort Worth rescinded their policy after they tried to, in secret, allow boys into girls' bathrooms. And so, you know, the only way to handle this issue is for the state to step in with the House and Senate representing people across the state and have a consistent law across the state. And all it does is says that you go into the bathroom that corresponds to your birth certificate. And if that doesn't work for you, there's a private bathroom you can have access to and be accommodated. If you have a young child like I do and you need to gain access to a bathroom, there's exceptions for those things if there are medical reasons. And so very balanced approach. It doesn't impact private business. Private businesses can do whatever they want. Doesn't disturb the free market. So if Target wants to allow men into girls' locker rooms and suffer their stock price and, you know, have all the negative stuff they're having, that's up to them. This bill is about public schools and about government buildings. And look, the fact of the matter is this is an issue that's been pushed by the left, or whoever you want to call folks on the other side. And so we can't just look the other way and think that there's not a problem. You know, FRC's got a great list of 21 different incidents where the wrong people have been in the bathroom and some people have been harmed, some people have been surprised. So at txvalues.org is our website. You can
say
that
again.
That information.
Say that again.
TX, like the state, txvalues.org is our website. And so, yeah, the Senate's passed it. Now we're on to the House. And so we expect the Texas House, which has almost 100 out of 150 Republicans, should be easy to get a majority.
So the House should be a foregone conclusion for you, correct?
Well, it should be, you know, so we'll see. They've got plenty of time, and so now it's up to the House to pass this. We had Democrats support this in the Senate, so I don't know why all the Republicans on the House side wouldn't support it.
All right, I've got a question for you. Let's go back to North Carolina. I'll play devil's advocate for a second. You're going to have businesses leave. You're going to have the NBA boycott. You're going to have PayPal refuse to do business in the state of Texas. The governor of the state of North Carolina tried to toe the line, and he ended up losing his election because the people voted him out of office. What makes the situation in Texas different, and how do you respond to those claims?
Well, with no disrespect to my good friend John Rustin and others in North Carolina, Texas is not North Carolina. We have the 10th largest economy in the world. We have a larger economy than most countries. It's no joke when we say it's like a whole other country, because it practically is. And so we're not going to let the NFL and other entities try to dictate our public policy. We're not dictating to them their public policy. The legislation respects private businesses and says that they don't have to be beholden to government policy on this. They can set any policy they want. And the fact of the matter is, in North Carolina, no businesses left North Carolina. The lieutenant governor, Dan Forst, who won overwhelmingly, he was the one really towing the line. even though Governor McCrory was certain a part of the late support effort of House Bill 2 over there. So Danforth testified last week in our Senate Affairs Committee on this issue and made it very clear no businesses left North Carolina. Now, did PayPal refuse to expand by 400 jobs? Well, they say that that was what their position was, but North Carolina is adding 400 jobs a week. They are number two for business. In every county in North Carolina, tourism is up. That state is rocking it when it comes to the economy. And you might suggest that maybe that's because they're supporting privacy and safety in intimate facilities. Whatever the case may be, the economic condition in North Carolina is incredible. And so was there an initial response where there were some negative things that happened because people were getting political? Sure. Did the NCA move an event? Yeah, they moved some of their events, and when they moved them to other places, those events did terrible. When the NBA moved their All-Star game to New Orleans, they had trouble selling tickets. But let's talk about apples to apples. This issue happened in Texas when the people in Houston voted down a policy that would have allowed men into women's bathrooms. What happened? Did we lose the Super Bowl? No, we had one of the most historic Super Bowls in history. We also hosted the Final Four about 8 months after voting for a policy to keep men out of women's bathrooms, just like Senate Bill 6. And so the facts of the matter is when this issue happened in Texas, we haven't seen that. Now, we've seen some businesses make that economic argument, but they're based on hypotheticals. And so the economy in Texas is extremely strong, and there's not any other place for them to go because you've got about 20 different states when it comes to this public school issue that have already taken a position. They don't want boys and girls bathrooms.
Now, again, I'm going to emphasize not only the content of what you're saying, but I'm going to call it the character, the spine, the courage, the confidence in the way you're delivering your point. People, you need to listen to this. This is a winning argument. How many times did you hear Jonathan say, should a man be allowed in a woman's restroom? That is a winning argument. Don't let people change the definition of what's really going on. I, for example, as you know, have been challenged by the Department of Education and the Office of Civil Rights to start accommodating transgenders on my campus. And I said, no, I will not dumb down the definition of a woman to nothing but a fabrication and a fantasy. Women are real. They're biological facts. And we will not give their privacy, their dignity, their locker room, their sport over to some dysphoric male that raises his hand on a given day and says, I'm a woman. Jonathan, comments.
Well, Senator Lois Kolkhorst, who is a former NCAA athlete for Texas Christian University, she's the author of the Senate Bill 6, Texas Privacy Act. You know, she talked a lot about her concerns on how Title IX, that was so important for women, how that can be taken advantage of and really misused if we don't have some consistent standards in place when it comes to these issues. And we've already seen it happen. The Obama administration, not only were they a part of redefining marriage, they tried to redefine Title IX. They didn't go through Congress. They just wrote some things up on their own. They violated the Administrative Procedures Act. And because of that, a federal judge in Texas has ruled against them and enjoined, has stopped that very dangerous letter from going into place that would have forced boys into girls' bathrooms. Not only bathrooms, showers, and locker rooms, it applied to overnight trips. So I think
Absolutely.
That when it comes to, you know, the importance of this issue for women, we've got feminist women, we've got lesbians that are saying, wait a minute, we don't agree with these type of policies that don't have consistent standards so people can decide on their own whether they want to go in one bathroom or another. And people can't simply say, hey, I'm not sure you belong in here. The other thing, too, women are saying is those that are sexual assault victims, they're saying, look, it's not just about if we get assaulted, because people say, oh, well, we have laws in place that if you assault someone in a bathroom, it's already illegal. But we don't have a state law in Texas that says that you're not allowed to be present in the bathroom that doesn't correspond to your sex. And so that was found out by the media. They were, I think, surprised to discover there's no state law that says a man just can't be in there. So sexual assault victims, women, have
bottom line,
the presence of a man.
The bottom line is what you're saying is a defense of the woman. You acknowledge her identity, you acknowledge her rights, you acknowledge her privacy, and you are acknowledging that Title IX was established to give her all of those things. And how in the world can you, under the auspices of Title IX, deny the fact of the female? Jonathan, thank you for joining us on Washington Watch this afternoon. Great to have you.
God bless you. Thank you.
You can find out more about SB 6, Texas Values, and so much more when you visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, helping you stay informed on the issues that matter to you. You can donate when you visit TonyPerkins.com. When we come back, we'll take a look at Rachel Maddow, President Trump's taxes, and their impact on the perception of the media. Don't go away. We'll be back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch right after this.
Tony Perkins here, inviting you to join my wife, LaJuana, and me on Family Research Council's first ever Alaska cruise. On July 29th, we'll sail from Seattle aboard Holland America's luxurious MS Yuridan for an adventure of fellowship and worship surrounded by some of the most breathtaking beauty in all of God's creation. For more information or to book your Alaskan adventure, call 844-872-5155 or go to TonyPerkins.com. Again, that's 844-872-5155 or TonyPerkins.com.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. As I'm sure you've heard, MSNBC's Rachel Maddow had her biggest night of television, which, as it turns out, probably wasn't a good thing. Oklahoma Wesleyan University President Dr. Everett Piper sat down with the Media Research Center's Dan Gaynor to talk about it.
Dan, welcome to Washington Watch.
It's a pleasure. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I trust you are, too. Set us up here. I'm going to turn you loose a bit. There's a lot of hype over this Rachel Maddow deal. Some are equating it to Geraldo Rivera's opening of Al Capone's vault. Is the hype justified? Was she justified? Did this thing have any teeth? Or are we dealing with dentures here? What's the issue?
She embarrassed herself. She overhyped something. I mean, she had said, hey, we've got the top two pages of you know, Trump's taxes, we'll be able to tell you a little bit, but there's not a lot there. In reality, not only did they overhype it, they got the numbers wrong. There's a whole big mess. And the result was the amazing thing. Here's someone, Rachel Maddow was being lionized in the press, spent days of New York Times, Washington Post, Hollywood Reporter, Huffington Post, AP, all doing these wonderful stories about Rachel because her ratings were up. She's the queen of the resistance now, and that's the way they depicted her. And so everybody was queued up to watch this, left wing, right wing, journalists, everybody, and they were all disappointed. The only people who were defending her were people at her own network. Even CNBC executive editor was out there saying that Donald Trump had a big win thanks to Rachel Maddow.
All right. The White House blasted the release of the return as illegal. But Johnson and others argues that the reporting on the unsolicited documents is perfectly legal under the First Amendment. And some are suggesting that the Trump administration actually leaked it on purpose. Do you have any inside scoop on this for us?
Well, I don't think anybody's sure. The document itself said client copy, but a lot of people had access to that. And there's some theorizing that maybe it came from a previous court case he'd had, or an ex-wife, or something, or maybe just a disgruntled employee. The reality is accountants would have had access to that, employees. Here's the interesting thing, though. The media want to tell you on any other day that Donald Trump is an idiot, a fool, he's incompetent, he can't handle this job. And then on days where things go well for him, then suddenly he's an evil master genius. Hmm. He somehow orchestrated this. He leaked this. It was all Donald Trump. Well, wait a second. You only get one of those. You can either declare Donald Trump stupid, and then if something smart happens, you have to say this goes against your strategy and your opinion, or he's really smart, in which case then all the other stuff drops away. But what they're trying to do is have both, and just anything that matches one of them, they go to. And this goes back to a long-held strategy that the left has been using, going back at least to Reagan, and that is every Republican, every conservative is either crazy, stupid, or evil, or some combination of all three. Reagan, because they said he was senile, he becomes crazy. George H.W. Bush, because he ran the CIA, he's evil. And it just goes on down there from there. It's insane.
And they demonstrate their lack of sincerity by not pursuing any degree of truth in the story. In other words, like you say, they'll spin it one way, they'll spin it the other way, they'll speak out of both sides of their mouths. On one side of their mouth, Donald Trump is an idiot and he's stupid. On the other side, like you said, he's an evil genius. Well, which is it? The point is, even those that disagree with Trump, and I know a lot of people, I know a lot of people within the conservative, the Christian community that disagree with much of Donald Trump's past, but those decisions he's making today, most of those people are willing to acknowledge as being for the good of religious freedom, the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, and constitutional rights. And they're acknowledging that even a man that they may disagree with on some issues is doing some things that are right, and they're willing to admit it. Those are the people that I respect for telling the truth, not those that spin everything negative every time they want to just continue to grind their axe.
Oh, and that's unfortunately become the media. And that's one of the reasons why so many in the press were upset with Maddow. Dylan Byers from CNN yesterday, one of their media critics, was concerned because he felt that this undermined, you know, traditional journalism. Because that's what the media want. The media want somehow a way to take down Donald Trump. And if you say you can do it and then you don't, then what you do is you undermine other attempts. I've never seen a media so concerned with destroying a presidency from day one that they are in this election. And that's what conservatives need to understand, that every action Donald Trump takes, the media and the left are using as an opportunity to impeach him, destroy him, and they're trying very hard to do it.
In 30 to 45 seconds, does this story have legs? Where's it going to go from here?
Oh, the media want to forget this because it was embarrassing to them. So the only legs it has is that Donald Trump earned a lot of money and paid more taxes than anybody really wants to accept. And they'll move on to some new outrage in another couple of minutes.
Dan, thanks so much for joining us on Washington Watch. Really appreciate your contribution and your leadership.
Thank you very much. And I met some of your students that they really impressed me. Tell them to apply for internships.
All right. Blessings. We will. I'll take you up on that.
You can find out more about Media Research Center when you visit tonyperkins.com. If you missed any of today's program, head on over to our website and you can find a link to all the stories we've covered today. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. And if you find the weekend edition of Washington Watch informative and useful, we'd encourage you to tell your friends about Washington Watch. You can help us reach more people with this radio ministry by supporting our efforts and heading over to tonyperkins.com and clicking on the donate button. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.